Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If somebody told you a couple of years ago that a social democrat, a socialist, was a top contender for the Democratic Party presidential nomination within shouting distance of the White House, you might have rolled your eyes. And yet, here's Bernie Sanders, killing it in the polls, drawing in enormous crowds, raising almost as much money now as Hillary Clinton, and very upfront that this country needs dramatic change. He's with us here today. This hour on Point, we speak with candidate Bernie Sanders. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you feeling the burn? Does Bernie Sanders turn you on, turn you off? Can he really close the deal with American voters? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Vermont Senator and former Vermont Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent in U.S. congressional history, former mayor of Burlington, Vermont. He is now a very hot candidate for the Democratic Party's nomination for president in 2016. Senator Sanders, welcome to On Point. Thank you for being here.
Great to be with you, Tom.
When you dove in, was it to deliver a message or to win? Did you think you'd be in this position at this point in the campaign?
No. When we got into this race, our intention was to win. We thought we had a message that would resonate with the American people. My experience has been that the American people are sick and tired of seeing the middle class continue to decline. Over 47 million people living in poverty and almost all new income and wealth going to the top 1%. That was a message that I believed would resonate. If you are asking me, did I believe it would resonate as quickly as it has? No, that I did not think. The fact that we're drawing huge crowds all over this country, we'll be in Boston, by the way, on Saturday evening, Springfield, Mass, Saturday afternoon. The kinds of crowds we're drawing, the kinds of small donations that are coming into the campaign, the kind of volunteer organizations that we're putting together has gone a lot faster than I thought it would.
We want to talk to you about what you want to do, Bernie Sanders, how you want to do it, and then presidential politics. Big picture, what you want to do. You're talking about a political revolution and a very big agenda of changes. Big picture, what do you want to do?
Big picture is we have got to end the grotesque level of income and wealth inequality in this country. We have got to create millions of decent-paying jobs because real unemployment in this country, Tom, is not 5.1%. It's over 10% when you include those people who have given up looking for work and those people who are working part-time. Youth unemployment for African-American kids is 51%. We have more people in jail than any other country. So, yes, count me as a radical. I want to invest in jobs and education for our young people rather than jails and incarceration. In my view, the Citizens United Supreme Court decision is an affront to democracy in this country. It has got to be overturned. We have got to move toward public funding of elections so that we end up having people running for office who are looking out for the best interests of their constituents, not hustling money for millionaires and billionaires. What Pope Francis just told us last week, and what everybody who listens to scientists knows to be true, climate change is a huge, huge global crisis. In my view, the United States has got to lead the world, working with China, Russia, India, other countries, transforming our energy system away from fossil fuel energy efficiency and sustainable energy. In a competitive global economy, it is totally insane that hundreds of thousands of young people cannot afford to go to college. We need public colleges and universities to be tuition-free. Not a radical idea, actually. It existed in this country 50 or 60 years ago. It exists in a number of other countries around the world. And to pay for these programs, which are expensive, what we have finally got to say is that when the top one-tenth of 1% of the people in this country own almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%, when 58% of all new income today goes to the top 1%, yes, the wealthy and profitable large corporations will have to start paying their fair share of taxes.
Senator Sanders, you call yourself a democratic socialist. Can you define that? And what does it mean in policy terms?
What it means, Tom, is that we have got to look at countries around the world, including many democratic socialists or labor governments or social democratic countries, countries like Denmark, Finland, Sweden, Norway, and other countries that have done some really extraordinary things for their working people and the middle class. Let me just give you a few examples. Today, despite the gains of the Affordable Care Act, the United States remains the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people as a right. We still have 29 million people uninsured and many more underinsured, and we pay by far the highest cost per capita for health care than any other country. Why is that, Tom? Why are we the only major country that doesn't guarantee health care to all? I live in Burlington, Vermont, 100 miles away from the Canadian border. They provide health care to all people. Another obvious example. The United States is the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee paid family and medical leave. So there are women who are having babies today who do not have a lot of money, will be forced to go back to work a week from now or 2 weeks from now, separate themselves from their newborn babies because they need to go out and earn a living to take care of their family. Every other country on earth, major country, says, you know what? When a woman has a baby, dad has a baby, they should have some income to stay home, to get to love their baby, know their baby. We are the only country that does not do that. We have the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth. Is that really where we should be? We are the wealthiest country in the history of the world, but the vast majority of the people don't know it because they're working for longer hours and low wages.
So democratic socialist means guaranteeing certain services?
Yes, it does. It means learning from countries and saying, you know what? Everybody should have health care as a right. Everybody, regardless of the income of their family, should be able to get the education that they need. Don't tell some poor bright kid who wants to become a doctor or an engineer that he or she can't do that because their family does not have a lot of money. So essentially what it means in so many words, Tom, is that instead of having a government, which we do today, which is significantly dominated by big money interests and large campaign donors, we should have a government that represents ordinary Americans, middle class, working class Americans, and guarantee the rights of people to live in dignity and security.
Can we afford that? You've got a lot of European countries. You're citing some, but you've got a lot with very large debt. We have very large debt. Washington Post estimates today that your program would cost $3.27 trillion. That's a lot of money.
Yes, but like other analysts, we pay for, you know, who exaggerate what we're doing. We pay for what we're doing. But here's the point, Tom. Yes, I'm not going to deny that if you make certain that every public college and university is tuition-free, and if you, by the way, substantially lower student debt, which is now a very serious problem, Tom, that will cost you about $70 billion a year. That's a lot of money. But you know how we pay for it? We pay for it based on a tax on Wall Street speculation. Yes, I oppose cutting Social Security benefits. I want to expand it. We pay for that by demanding that the wealthiest people in this country, people earning over $250,000 a year, we will lift the cap on taxable income, and they will, in fact, pay on all of their income rather than at $118,000 right now. So you name the issue, and we are paying for it by doing away, for example, with the absurd loophole that now exists such that profitable corporations making billions of dollars a year can stash their money in the Cayman Islands and in Bermuda not pay a nickel in federal taxes.
Our friend John Harwood asked you in May. I want to ask you again now. He said, look, if you implement all this and the net effect of it is to pull down economic growth in this country, you get more equitable distribution of income but less economic growth. Is that worth it to you? And you said, yes. Why? Are you still there?
Well, what I said is growth just for the sake of growth does not necessarily mean anything for middle class and working families. Today, the median family income is about $4,000 less than it was in 1999. 58% of all new income is going to the top 1%. So you don't want growth to make millionaires and billionaires wealthier. What you want is economic growth, which benefits the middle class and working class of this country. What I believe, and as opposed to many of my Republican colleagues who think tax breaks to the rich and corporations will benefit everybody, that's trickle-down economics. I think historically that has been shown to be false. I believe that if you put money into the hands of low-income and working families, raising the minimum wage, creating jobs to deal with unemployment, they will then have the money to go out and spend and create other types of jobs. So I think our approach will substantially benefit the middle class and working families of this country.
For Democrats, why vote for you, Bernie Sanders, rather than, at this point, Hillary Clinton, let's say?
Well, you know, I have known Hillary Clinton for 25 years, and I have a great deal of respect for Hillary Clinton. And I'm not going to tell you we are bosom buddies, but, you know, we're friends. We have known each other. We served in the Senate together. I think people have to assess where we are this moment in the history of this country. And if you think establishment politics and establishment economics is the answer to our problems, fine. There are good candidates out there. But if you think it's time for what I define as a political revolution, and that means involving millions and millions of people in the political process today in a way that has never been the case before, then I think I'm your candidate. And let me tell you why, Tom, and this is not just rhetoric. What I have said over and over again and repeat to you now is that no president, not Bernie Sanders, not Hillary Clinton, not anybody else, with the best intentions in the world can become president of the United States and effectively take on the incredible power of Wall Street, corporate America, the corporate media, large campaign donors. No president can do that. The only way we transform America and make government work for all of our people is through what I call a political revolution. And that means involving tens of millions of people in the political process.
It sounds a lot like Obama called for. Barack Obama, how'd that work out?
Well, in many ways, I would say that it is hard for anyone who's honest and not totally partisan not to say that we're a lot better off today than we were when George W. Bush left office and we were hemorrhaging 800,000 jobs a month. But, and we could talk about this after the break, I think that the president made a major mistake after running a brilliant campaign in 2008, not maintaining those ties with his grassroots base.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders about his run for the White House, about his call for a political revolution in this country, a revolution to the left. He joins us today from Washington. His latest fundraising numbers just in. He's right up there, almost neck and neck with Hillary Clinton now. Ahead in New Hampshire polls, who would have thought it months ago? Nationally, within 7 points by some polls now. Doing well in Iowa as well. There's a lot of fluid chemistry in the Democratic field. Bernie Sanders, right in the middle of it. David in New Orleans, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I have two quick comments and a question. First, I wanted to thank Senator Sanders for his 34 years of public service. I believe he can win the presidency and win big and bigger than Hillary Clinton. But even if his detractors are right, he has done the public great service talking about issues the donor class could care less about. Second, a message to Bernie supporters who might be listening. Senator Sanders is not the Messiah. He needs us as much as we need him, and he can't solve all these problems today on his own. He needs us to vote down ticket, call our elected officials, get involved in the process.
Your question, David.
And third, my question, I think the $15 an hour is a great platform for Senator Sanders, but what I haven't heard about and what's very important in New Orleans, which has a big restaurant industry, is the minimum wage for service tipped employees. Right now it's $2.13 an hour. And I was wondering if Senator Sanders had any ideas on what he could do to relieve those working class individuals.
David, we've got it. Particular, beyond the $15 an hour national minimum wage that you say you'd push for, Bernie Sanders, what about the waiters and servers out there?
He's absolutely right. I mean, it is beyond disgraceful that you have waiters and waitresses, people in the service industry who are making almost no money at all.
What about tips? Tips.
Yeah, well, sometimes if you're working in a good restaurant, you could do very well. My daughter used to work, and she did very well. On the other hand, if you're working in a diner and not a lot of people are coming in, you make zero tips on a bad day. So I think what we have to do is obviously substantially raise that minimum wage as well. Last point that I would make in terms of David's comment, and David, thanks very much for your support, is one of the reasons that I think we can win this election, in fact, do very well, is that Democrats win when voter turnout is high, Republicans win when voter turnout is low. The American people are prepared to stand up and fight back and get involved in a campaign, and I think that campaign is our campaign.
Beth asks us, she asks you, she says, overturning Citizens United is a focal point of your message. What specific steps will you take to implement this change? She asks on Facebook.
Well, two ways. Number one, what I've made very clear is no nominee of mine to the Supreme Court will get that nomination. Will have his or her name sent to the Senate unless they are very, very clear that they will, in fact, not only overturn Citizens United, but also make it one of the first orders of business that comes up to rehear the case. Second of all, we have got to continue the hard work for a constitutional amendment. The fastest route is overturning it. Thirdly, we need to move toward public funding of elections so that candidates in the future are just not dependent on big money interests.
Richard in New Shoreham, Rhode Island. Richard, you're on with Bernie Sanders.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen. Senator Sanders, this is a tripartite government. You have mentioned and taken a position on the main issues of the day, but what makes you think that you can get any support from Congress? What are you doing to get support from Congress or congressional candidates to do something more than Obama's doing? It seems to be a stalemate. Won't you be in the same position?
Bernie Sanders.
Well, Richard, that's a very fair question, Richard, and let me respond this way. I am not naive. On one hand, I have worked over the years on a number of important pieces of legislation with Republicans. In the last session of Congress, I helped as chairman of the Veterans Committee pass one of the more important pieces of legislation, working with people like John McCain in the Senate, Jeff Miller, Republican chairman in the House. So I do know how to work with Republicans. But here's the more important point. The more important point is that right now you have a United States Congress that to a very significant degree is controlled by big money interests. And Richard is right in that much of the legislation that I would be bringing forth would be opposed by Republicans.
Even Democrats. I mean, you had zero co-sponsors on your universal health care bill, on your free college bill.
But here is the point. The legislation and virtually all, not all, but virtually all of the programs that I am bringing forth has the support of the American people and, in some cases, the vast majority of the American people.
How do you bring that to bear in a way that actually gets the change?
Tom, that is a very good question. And the answer is that the President of the United States brings people together and rallies millions of people so they do know what's going on in a way that they don't know what's going on right now. Most people have not a clue about what the Republican agenda is.
Barack Obama had brought a lot of people together. They elected him. They re-elected him. He had a huge wave.
And the difference that I have, and I've said this before and I say it again, is that what Obama did after a brilliant campaign in 2008, let me say I'm a friend of Barack Obama. I work with him closely on many issues. But the big mistake that he made is to a significant degree he severed the ties between his very strong grassroots movement. And after he got elected, he basically said, I will take it from here on my own.
So your answer is to put millions of people in the mall in Washington? Is that what you envision?
Not a bad idea. On a given, you want to make public colleges tuition-free and public colleges and universities tuition-free? Yes. Actually, Tom, that's a good idea. If a million young people demanded that, marched on Washington, knew the legislation, and made it clear to every member of the Congress they were paying attention, yes, you would get public colleges and universities tuition-free in America,
I don't know.
And you would pay for it.
I mean, maybe you would.
How do you think? How do you think we had civil rights in this country?
Yeah.
How do you think you had a women's rights movement, a gay rights movement?
Yeah.
It starts from the bottom. We have got to do that right now.
Claire, in Madison, Wisconsin, you're on with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I've had the pleasure of seeing Bernie Sanders speak in person twice. He's a very exciting and compelling person. And
Claire, we've got it. Our time is short. Take us right to your question or comment.
Okay, thank you. The word socialist scares a lot of people, Senator Sanders, and I'd like you to explain what other U.S. institutions are right now, socialist institutions.
The word socialist, Claire, I appreciate that. Gallup poll, Bernie Sanders, says Americans are open to electing a president who's Catholic, female, black, Hispanic, Jewish, Mormon, gay, lesbian, evangelical Christian. Even 60% of Americans said they'd vote for a Muslim. Atheist, 58%. The absolute lowest category, socialist, 47%. How do you get over that?
Well, first of all, that 47% is probably a lot higher than it was a couple of years ago. And I think the answer is, as Claire indicated, is to talk about the issue. To talk about Social Security being a socialist program. to talk about the fact that your local police department or your fire department or your library is a publicly owned institution. I come from a city where our electric company is publicly owned. TVA is publicly owned. But I think we need to do a lot of education on this issue, primarily pointing out what governments around the world have done to protect their middle class and working families in terms of better retirement programs than we have right now, better child care programs than we have right now. So I think there is a lot of education to be done. But I think when we end up explaining what democratic socialism is, which is not what goes on in North Korea, not what went on in the Soviet Union, I think many people will be responding to that.
Senator Sanders, 1972, the first presidential race that I really have any memory of, and it was George McGovern. A lot of people on campuses were very, very excited about him. He was the big liberal in the race. Boom, out he went. He won one state, the one I'm sitting in right now. How do you get around that?
Well, we hope to do very well with young people. But I am, to be honest with you, Tom, I've been kind of blown away by the kind of response we've had from young people all over this country. But this is not just a campaign based on the support of young people. Every rally that we have and the kinds of support we're winning comes from the middle class, comes from working class people, comes from lower income people. The coalition that we are going to put together is the coalition that I've always believed in, that it is working families, low-income people, people of color, the immigrant community. I think we put that coalition together of people who are saying that in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, we can do a lot better for working families than is currently the case.
Do you need Joe Biden in the race to split the mainstream vote to beat Hillary Clinton?
Well, there are some polls who say that if Joe Biden comes in, it works for us. Others polls say that's not so much the case. This is a decision that the vice president has to make. I've known Joe for many years. Very, very decent guy. Let me just say this. What I have tried to do in this campaign, and if Joe Biden gets in, I will continue to do it, is not get involved in personal attacks against people, not run negative ads, but just debate and talk about the most important issues facing this country. I think that is what the American people are entitled to hear. And if Joe Biden gets in, I will continue that and welcome him in with open arms.
U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont. barn burning lately. Bernie Sanders, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
With us right now, listening in, ready to think and talk about this candidacy, Bernie Sanders. First, Howard Fineman, editorial director of the Huffington Post Media Group, with us from Washington. Howard, welcome. Thank you for being here.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
And from New York, Katrina Vandenhoevel. She's editor, publisher, part owner of the magazine The Nation. Katrina, welcome back to On Point as well.
Thank you, Tom.
Howard, what do you make of the arc of Bernie Sanders' candidacy from his announcement that he was getting into where he stands today? What do you say, Howard?
Well, first thing I'm going to say is about a year and a half ago, I'm trying to remember exactly when, I didn't pull up the piece, I got a call from his press secretary, Mike Briggs, saying, Bernie would love to talk to you. So I have some background in covering presidential campaigns, so off I went to Bernie's office.
Yep.
And he basically said to me then, I'm doing this. I'm going to be in. Take me seriously. This is going to happen. I wrote the piece, and I said, don't discount Bernie Sanders, but I wrote it almost tongue-in-cheek, like, what a nice man, sort of exuberant senior citizen. Isn't it great? He should be out there. Everybody, it's a free country. Go run. But did I think anything like this would happen? Absolutely not. But I think Bernie did. I mean, Bernie's fashioned his own political machinery going back to the very beginning in Burlington, Vermont. He's rarely lost. I don't know if he's ever lost an election. He's an amazing guy. So, and his message is on all points with the activist portion of the Democratic Party. It's really an amazing thing to watch.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, is the activist portion of the Democratic Party enough to put Bernie Sanders in the winner's circle for the nomination of the Democrats?
You know, Tom, we are at a moment in this country when what was once unimaginable may well be thinkable. As Bernie Sanders said, he is blown away by what he's seen. The nation's been covering Bernie Sanders for close to 30 years. He is a serious candidate with serious issues. Can Bernie win? I think Bernie has already won in one way. He's changed the public conversation for the better. He has put long-neglected issues on the table. He's focused his campaign on serious problems and offered serious solutions, helped elevate inequality. You heard it now. So I think anything is possible. I think we're living at a moment, not just in this country. Around the world, there is an uprising against austerity, status quo politics. The rules are being rewritten for better and for worse. So you heard the good senator from Vermont lay out his issues, which I think are fully electable. Those issues, Bernie Sanders does one thing which I kind of disagree with. He talks about democratic socialism and begins to refer to other countries. All power to looking at other countries. I think too often we're frightened of that because of American exceptionalism. I would say go back in this country's history. Franklin Delano Roosevelt stood on the floor of the Capitol in 1944 and laid out an economic bill of rights, guaranteeing people a job, health care, a shelter. I mean, those are the ideas to retrieve in our very own history. Where did Social Security come from? Medicare come from? Bernie Sanders knows this all too well, and I think he's an unreconstructed New Dealer.
Howard, what's he writing in these poll numbers? What exactly is going on here? Is this that Hillary Clinton's not catching fire, that people are worried about her email problem, or that they're really ready to go down the Sanders path and want to?
Well, I think Katrina mentioned two very key points. One was is impatience with austerity, if you want to put it that way. Another way to put that is...
I thought that was in Europe. Is that really here?
Yeah, in the sense that middle-class people and working people...
Yeah.
Don't feel any real benefit from the way the economy's working right now. They're working harder. They're working longer hours. They're in real income terms, in real money terms. They're not making more money. They may be making less. There's a lot of anger and impatience and a sort of slow burn, to use the pun, about that. And the other part of it is, as she says, just disgust with the political system. We're in a situation where, in the latest Gallup poll, I think that Congress, the rating of Congress is, what, 9% or something like that? Public institutions are regarded as unresponsive. And even though Bernie Sanders has decades of experience as an elected official, you know, as mayor, as a congressman, as senator, he's an insider in that sense. Because of who he is, because he's a senior, because he's from Brooklyn, because he has a weird label of democratic socialist.
His own label. I mean,
his own label, yes. Well, he gave it. That's his.
Yep.
And he's proud of it. Although I wouldn't defend it by saying we're not North Korea or the Soviet Union.
No. Low bar.
I wouldn't do it that way. He's an outsider. See, he's a sort of weird insider-outsider. And he fits the mood of the times on the Democratic side. On the Republican side, you have other agitators who are also against the system from their point of view, a sort of radical libertarian, you know, shut down the government point of view. And that is very much what's going on right now in the campaign. The question is going to be, later down the road, when tens of millions of people who don't pay attention to politics come vote, when they start actually paying a little bit of attention to this, are they going to have that same sense of anger and impatience that is clear at the grassroots in both parties?
What do you say, Katrina? Is this another George McGovern candidacy in the making, a Howard Dean burnout, or more tread on the tire?
You know, you did bring up George McGovern. I mean, this is a different moment, I think, Tom.
Yeah,
I think it's a different moment. You know, a few things. One, just to come back to the news of the day, I've never loved the idea of how too many, the media, the establishment, measure candidates' quote viability by how much they raise. But it is remarkable
when you raise it online, when it's from small donations.
Exactly,
that
the
is
small,
people
as the New York Times called it, small beer donors. You know, I mean, he's raised $26 million at at a time, and that fundraising hall is a rebuke to this moment when fewer than 400 families are going to be responsible for almost half of the money raised in this campaign. So that sends a message too, and he's living what he is talking in terms of the need for small donors, more people involved in our political system.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, about his run for the White House, his call for a political revolution in this country, and his chances of actually winning. We've just been talking with Bernie Sanders. Howard Feynman is with us right now from Huffington Post Media Group. Katrina VandenHeuvel from The Nation. You can join us. Is Bernie turning you on, turning you off? Is America ready for a democratic socialist? Does the label matter to you? What is making him a hot ticket this time? And can he do better? Would he somehow do better if he were to take the White House than Barack Obama has done at working with the Congress? Or would he hit the same wall? He's already tried to reach out a couple of weeks ago at Liberty University, very conservative, Lynchburg, Virginia, Jerry Falwell country, kind of epicenter of conservative Southern evangelical thinking. He said, let's be frank, he told that crowd. I support, Bernie Sanders said, abortion and gay marriage, and you don't. But he said,
let me respectfully suggest that there are other issues out there that are of enormous consequence to our country and, in fact, to the entire world, that maybe, just maybe, we do not disagree on. And maybe, just maybe, we can try to work together to resolve them.
Bernie Sanders at Liberty University. Conservatives, did he turn your head at Liberty University a little at all? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's get a call from Sanders country, I suppose, North Bennington, Vermont. Naomi is calling. Naomi, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, Bernie can win, and Bernie will win if everyone who supports him votes. What I'm seeing is that Bernie is getting people involved who've never voted, and he's inspiring those who have been alienated from the process.
And what about resistance in the past once it gets into a general election to his kind of big social programs? It's been a long time since FDR, Naomi.
What I heard him say earlier on your program is that he plans to keep the coalition that he's building. He's not going to walk away from us.
Yeah, I wonder how that works. I want to hold that thought about how he would actually work with his supporters if he were in office. Appreciate your call, Naomi. One more right here, Sally in Alma, Wisconsin. Sally, you're on.
Yes. Hi, I'm a conservative person, and I think if Bernie would get in, he'd destroy our country, because I just want to tell you something for a minute. My
okay.
father died when I was 12,
yep.
and my sister was 13 or 14, and he was worked on the subway system in Brooklyn. I'm also from Brooklyn.
Like Bernie. He's a Flatbush kid.
Like
okay.
Bernie. I'm Bushwick.
Yep.
Okay, so then my mother raised us that don't ask the country what they're going to do for you. You go out and you work. And my sister and I, the three of us, worked real hard. I took care of Jewish kids up in the Catskills. I cleaned houses. I was a waitress. And I graduated from the University of Dayton, which is a Catholic college. My sister, Marilyn, graduated as a dental hygienist.
So I get it, Sally. You worked hard. You got over a big bump that was put in front of you, very big.
Right.
And I'm sorry for your father. But what about, and I take that. I totally take that. What about when Bernie says, look, people are working hard, and the economy's not working for them. You must look around and see some of that.
I see some of it, but I'm going to say something now. A little girl said this to me, and I don't mean it in an insulting way. I'm a conservative. A little girl, I was walking in a Catholic fair up in Minneapolis, actually, and she said, you know, she was talking about politics. I was so shocked. She said, the Democrats, if you're hungry, will give you a fish. The Republicans will give you a fishing pole and teach you how to fish to make yourself self-sufficient. And that's what my mother raised us to be. And that's what we have to do. We have to take these children and put them in good schools, the black children. They can't keep saying they're victims. My parents were from Ireland, and they maybe were victims from the English. They were starved to death here, the people. And they came over here and said, this is the greatest country in the world, and I think it will. But it isn't going to probably if we get Bernie in there, because he's going to take us right down the old tube.
Sally, we've got it. Howard Fineman, Sally's kind of channeling what I no doubt you would see if we come to a debate at some point where it's the Republican candidate up against Bernie. I mean, this is the makers and takers. This is kind of the Romney argument. This is the traditional Republican argument. You give too much, you turn everybody into victims and destroy the economy.
Well, actually, the way that Democrats have successfully sold government programs is with the fishing pole argument. Not the fish, but the fishing pole. What, after all, was the GI Bill after World War II, offering education to veterans? That wasn't giving them a job. That wasn't guaranteeing them a wage. That was helping them get an education so they could go out and go fishing themselves. I think that's the way it's traditionally been framed in America, and I would agree with the caller that if Bernie Sanders is going to have a chance to succeed, he's got to frame it that way as well. He's got to say, you need parental leave and family leave to strengthen families. You need it to help people so they can work. You need free public education so people can learn jobs, so they can carry out the American can-do spirit. He's got to frame it in those terms. I would agree with that caller. And that's going to be a challenge for Bernie if he gets far enough to have the chance to do it.
Katrina, what about the fear of government bloat, government inefficiency? I mean, he wants to get the federal government in the middle of college and health care and child care, single-payer health care. Americans have seen that this can spiral into ineffective programs that are quite costly.
I think what Bernie Sanders is speaking to is a sense on behalf of millions of Americans that our government has been captured by the richest, captured by lobbyists who are not working, let's admit it, for the middle class or the poor. And you take back that government, you clean it up, you don't make it do everything, but you make it work for working people and who, you know, a lot of working people in this country, and all power to the caller. It's a little bit like a battle between Flatbush and Bushwick.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people feel they've gotten the shaft. Howard spoke to this. Bernie, I think, speaks to growth, but not just for growth's sake, because growth can just mean we got more billionaires, we got more oligarchs. So I think Bernie Sanders can speak in a way that people look beyond the labels. And one thing I would say is we're seeing people look beyond the labels, and millions of people are meeting Bernie Sanders for the first time. Why is that? I always like to use the example, Meet the Press. Chuck Todd became host a few months later. He brought on Bernie Sanders last year for the first time. John McCain, I think the guy has a cot down there. He's on every weekend. So, you know, no wonder Americans look out at the range of issues offered in the marketplace of ideas in our politics and don't understand that there is a whole set of issues which Bernie Sanders is raising, which when they hear about it, they don't think socialism, democratic or not. They think, hey, that idea might work for my family.
Hey, Howard,
I like the idea.
Yeah. I, of course, people are frustrated. There's no question about that. You see that showing up in a different kind of get me out of here, a response that puts Donald Trump up there. Howard, lots of people online, though, are asking, how would he implement this? How would he get that done? Yeah. Here's Dot Lee. He says, I love Bernie, but the question must be asked, how is he going to accomplish all that he's campaigned on with a deeply divided Congress? We've seen the Obama Stonewall, Congress v. Obama. How does, you know, you ask Bernie that, you heard it. He says, well, we get millions of people up in arms, maybe even on the mall in Washington.
Well, yes, I was going to say that if Bernie gets elected, the thing to invest in is bus companies, because there's going to be millions of people on the mall every week trying to pass legislation. Obviously, it doesn't work that way.
And what do you mean it obviously doesn't work that way?
You can't.
Because that's what he said it would be his way.
Well, I know, and I'm expressing skepticism that every time you want to pass a piece of legislation, you're going to have a million people on the mall. That's what we have representative government for. It doesn't quite work that way. I think it's a problem and a weakness that he's going to have to address. He's going to have to talk about how he makes common cause with fellow Democrats. It's fine that he passed a bill with some Republicans, and he even mentioned John McCain, I think, in terms of passing that piece of legislation. He's got to show that this is the flip side of the lone wolf democratic socialist in the Congress thing. He does have to make that case, because that was the piece missing in a way from Barack Obama, in that Barack Obama was a unique figure who rose on his own, really against the party establishment. He came to town. He had the Democrats on his side for the most part, but he couldn't work the system all that well. How's Bernie Sanders going to do it? I think that's a legitimate question that he's going to have to answer.
Oh, it's a pretty big deal, isn't it? I mean, Katrina, a lot of people are scared of another 8 years, possibly, of deep freeze where a lot doesn't get done. They might go for Hillary, possibly, just to say, well, maybe she can negotiate. Okay, it'll be more centrist, but we'll get something here.
No, but I do think Bernie Sanders responded to that question. President Obama ran a brilliant campaign. He brought in millions of people, and Bernie Sanders will need to excite the coalition he speaks to, which is not fully there, but he needs to excite it. He needs to get out the vote. He needs more voters. But change comes from, you know, from not – what President Obama did after he was elected was he demobilized those supporters and turned inside. Now, he's looking out in this last year and a half, mm-hmm. but he turned inside. And in the system inside Washington, you need organized people, not just inside those halls, but outside, and not just in Washington, but around the country. Let's be honest, there's a lot of gridlock in D.C. today, but there's lots happening locally in states. If you can mobilize some of that energy, drive that into Washington, that's a theory of change. So, you know, you begin to move in that way. By the way, and Bernie Sanders is an insider, Tom, as you noted. He has worked in transpartisan ways with people like Senator McCain on the Veteran Affairs Committee. So there are a slew of issues, it seems to me, that could be moved. And I think Bernie Sanders does want to speak to everyone and not just to Democrats, but he would have a good cohort inside the House and Senate of Democrats. Elizabeth Warren is not the only great populist Democrat inside the Senate. There is a kind of caucus which can be mobilized.
Mary Lee in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Mary Lee, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I took the opportunity a few weeks ago when Bernie opened an office in Marion, our side city here in Cedar Rapids.
Yeah.
And went to listen to him speak. And as always, the crowds were thrilled with his populist address. He has a lot of great things that make people feel excited. I mean, me too. I consider myself an independent. I think he has fantastic issues on the table. But every week, we're watching children die accidental deaths with guns in their home. Every week, we're hearing of another shooting at a mall or at a school. I asked the senator to please address gun control, and he refused. When I was shaking his hand and I looked him in the eye and I said, sir, we're losing too many children. Will you please speak on gun control? He just told me to go look at his record. That should be good enough.
It can be pretty gruff sometimes, one-on-one. There's no question about that. Mary Lee, let me pick that up. Our time grows short here again. Howard Fineman on gun control. Bernie Sanders has been kind of all over the spectrum. He's not rock solid for it by any means.
Yes, and Bernie can be a brutal realist politically. And one aspect of brutal realism is getting elected in Vermont, which is a state where people use guns to hunt food. Mm. So he's got a mixed record on that, and I think at one point he had, if not now, he has quite a good rating from the NRA. And that's Bernie. And his argument would be, I had to do that to achieve the greater things I want to. He doesn't claim to not be a politician. I mean, I've known him for a long time. As I say, I interviewed him at great length last year when he was just getting started on this. He's a very practical, hard-headed politician. And I were he to somehow make it to the White House, you'd find some interesting things going on with Bernie Sanders as he tries to get his legislation passed. I'm not surprised he'd be
brutal realist.
The way he reacted,
and not unwilling to just let it go. John in Wayland, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just have a quick comment. I just want to say, basically, enough is enough. This is the time for a major change. Trickle down economics never worked. It's time to get money out of politics and return to a more equitable tax system where the ultra-rich pay their share. And as much as I'd love to see a woman in the White House, that's not enough to support Hillary, who is so entrenched and so beholden to Wall Street. So I strongly support Bernie Sanders.
And if he were elected as President of the United States, do you think he could bring his vision to pass, to be?
Yes, I do.
Millions on the mall? Is that the way, or how?
I don't know. I mean, that's quite an image, but... I'm not exactly sure, but I am sure he can.
John, enough is enough. We hear it. I want to ask about the race piece here. Democrats have typically won by having very strong minority support. Howard Fineman, we saw that difficult exchange of Bernie Sanders back at the Netroots convention what, in Phoenix, Arizona, a couple months ago. He's tried to soften up on that more recently, but is he going to get the kind of minority support that the Clintons have often rallied? Can he rally it?
Well, he's going to have to fight for it, and I think he can try to figure out ways to do it. He's a little bit stuck in time in the sense that he feels that the older generation, such as himself, deserve credit for marching in civil rights marches back in the day. And but this is a different time. The Black Lives Matter thing is a whole different gestalt, if I can use a fancy word. And
yep,
he's going to have to figure it out if, in fact, he's going to win the nomination, let alone run the Democratic Party.
What do you think determines the outcome here, Katrina? Clinton, Biden, Sanders?
I think, it ain't over until it's over, as Yogi would say. I mean, for Hillary Clinton at the moment, the media, though there are legitimate questions about the email scandal, there's no oxygen for her to raise other issues. I do think media coverage is important, and I think what we've seen is it's the end of an inevitability coverage. But for Bernie, I think what one has to respect, as you heard him on your show, the snide and snark of so much media commentary. He's a big student, by the way, of corporate media, of the shutting down of alternative views in corporate media. But the way he speaks makes me respect even more how he speaks about issues and isn't going to diss personalities.
But are you saying that Hillary Clinton's problem is just her media treatment?
No, I think she has serious issues being viewed as too tethered to Wall Street, to an establishment Democratic Party. However, as I said earlier, mm-hmm, one way Bernie has already won is he's pushing Hillary Clinton to speak in ways that she might not have otherwise done. On student debt, she claims it's better than Bernie's free college platform. She's come out with an excellent voting rights campaign finance reform platform. And she's speaking about incarceration issues, but she's still... The perception is very tough, and she hasn't really made the strong case, maybe it's not being heard, for why it's so important to have the first woman president. I think a strong case can be made, but we're not hearing it in a lot of ways because of the media.
I would find in 10 seconds, a year and a month from today, odds of Bernie Sanders being on the ballot, odds of him winning.
Oh, well, I can't put a percentage on it, but I underestimated him a year ago. I'm not going to do it again.
He's on a roll right now, and I'm grateful to the two of you for talking about Bernie with us today. Howard Fineman at Huffington Post Media Group. Thanks so much, Howard.
Thank you very much.
Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor at The Nation. Thank you for joining us, Katrina.
Thank you, Tom.
Our thanks as well to Bernie Sanders for spending some time with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.